This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. I'm Catherine Cruz. If you're just joining The Conversation, we're sharing a rebroadcast of a show where we talked about the vaccination debate. Our guests are Dr. Sarah Park, epidemiologist for the State Health Department, Yvonne Lau, Chief Operations Officer at the Hawaii Public School Charter School Commission, and Big Island pediatric specialist Dr. Peter Locatelli. Welcome to everybody this morning.
Thank you.
Dr. Park, maybe you can start out with, you know, measles 101. What's the disease and what makes it so risky?
Yeah, the measles has been around for thousands of years, actually. It's quite an old disease. It's a virus that causes a serious illness, a rash, and a fever illness, and can oftentimes, in the past, could lead to potential complications with brain inflammation, pneumonia, various other things. And, you know, it was a wonderful thing when we developed vaccines in the 1960s and started to implement that to vaccinate people. But it can cause quite a serious disease. When you have it, it is not fun. You're not going to be out and about. You know, kids that get it in the past or got it in the past were pretty miserable. They're very light sensitive, very uncomfortable, high fevers. And then, of course, the rash and such. And it was highly infectious. I mean, on the spectrum of all the different pathogens out there, it is probably the most infectious at this point. It's, you know, if you have 10 people in a room and then add one person who's got the measles and all the other 10 are susceptible, they've not been immunized or they've never had the disease themselves, at least 9 of them, if not all 10, are going to develop the disease. I mean, that's how infectious it is. Compare that with flu, where, you know, you put this, have the same situation, and you might have, you know, if as long as they're face-to-face, close together, there may be one person in that room that will get the flu. And again, they'd have to be totally close to, you know, face-to-face, and someone coughed in their face, and that's for flu. Whereas measles, you just have to be in the room. Oftentimes, doctor's offices, if a person with measles went into the waiting room and was in the waiting room, it's a real nightmare, because in that we have to follow up and try and find everyone who was in that room, waiting room, for 2 hours, up to 2 hours after the person left. You know, so the virus can linger in the air.
So highly contagious.
Highly contagious.
And then there have been deaths associated with
it,
right?
Yeah, it can be fatal. You know, and that is just real tragedy. And again, like I said earlier, the potential complications, brain infection, pneumonia, can, you know, lead to very severe sort of after effects, if you will. It's not a minor disease. And to give an anecdote that actually a colleague actually just relayed to me when he was younger, he said that when he was college age, he contracted measles, and he woke up 2 days after he apparently passed out in a hospital. I mean, that's how severe his measles case was. So, I mean, it just illustrates that this is not just some, you know, a minor cold that we're talking about.
Okay. And Dr. Locatelli, what's been your experience as a pediatrician?
Measles was very rare in my practice, because I, as well as most of the pediatricians that I know on the Big Island, would refuse to see children of families who refused immunization. And that's the only way we control such things, as Dr. Park mentioned, you know, the virus lingering around in the air in your office for 2 hours after the person leaves.
Right. And of course, now things have changed. it was declared eradicated in 2000. Mm-hmm. We're seeing large numbers now of unvaccinated children in the community and adults.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then not just in Hawaii, but nationally as well. It's a national discussion, actually, and how do we combat this, and why, you know, the reasons as leading to why we're seeing such a recrudescence. I mean, the numbers at this point nationally are well over, you know, 400 cases, and actually 600, I think, now, if I remember correctly. And, you know, approaching where the last time we saw this many cases was it was 2014, and then, you know, it won't be long if this continues at this rate. We could surpass what we saw in 1994, which is, well, almost 1,000 cases in that year nationally, you know. In Hawaii, we've dodged a bullet already this year when we had those two imported cases. You know, fortunately, it was a good collaborative effort between us and Washington State Public Health. You know, but had they not been able to identify those travelers and we not been able to find them, you know, it could have been much worse for us in Hawaii.
So for those who aren't aware, so what was the situation with that?
Yeah, so there was a family that had traveled here from Washington State, and they had been exposed to themselves to measles, and certain members in their family were not vaccinated. And of course, I mean, it was just basically predictable. I mean, we knew for certain, and of course, those individuals who were not vaccinated developed the disease, and then they were isolated while they were here and then allowed to return home. But the issue was that for us was, you know, had we not been notified by Washington State, had they not been able to identify them quickly and then notify us, and then us our ability to find them, we'd been hampered in finding them, they could have exposed a number of our community members out in Hawaii Island.
I was in Seattle when they declared the emergency, mm-hmm. and that was kind of fascinating to watch. Mm-hmm. But the headlines today, you know, L.A. has, you know, declared an outbreak. They're concerned about the L.A. airport. Mm-hmm. You know, we've heard things about cases in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. You know, that's on our doorstep, too.
The Philippines, they're seeing a number of deaths, actually. It's quite severe in the Philippines, and we're definitely watching that because of the number of travelers, our own residents that come back and forth, as well as visitors. You know, and just a lot of family ties with the Philippines, right? So we're watching that very closely.
And Yvonne?
Could I just interject something?
Yes.
For Dr. Park? I'm calling you from my home, which is just below Kona Hospital. Just above Kona Hospital is a charter school, which has 37% of the students taking religious exemptions to vaccines, and those students have to go up a road that passes right in front of Kona Hospital. Mm-hmm. So I know these issues aren't as acute in Oahu, but they're certainly a huge issue on the outer island.
Mm-hmm. And Yvonne Lau, you know, you are with the Charter School Commission, and I know you don't really have control over, you know, what happens at the charter schools per se and those communities, but weigh in on this.
Yeah, I think this raises in my mind, you know, when we look at the statistics, is that what we are seeing is that there is a great need for more information. And you know, we can address this issue by changing the policy and being more strict about it, or we can educate our communities better. And I think when I look at the numbers, that's what it's telling me, is that our schools need help. And we really look forward to working with the members of the medical community as well as the Department of Health and helping our schools get the message out that vaccinations are really important and it's a health and safety issue.
Could I interject something here too?
Yes.
A couple of years ago, I talked with the director for preschool education at Kamehameha Schools because they were starting to see vaccine refusal in students who were going to attend Kamehameha preschools on the Big Island. And I asked her what the Kamehameha Schools policy was on that, and she told me they were very afraid of it, but their attorneys told them they couldn't do anything about it because the objections are religious in nature. Is that true as it applies to charter schools also?
Mm-hmm.
I can actually answer that. This is Dr. Park. In that, unfortunately, that's entirely correct. We're all bound by the law, and so it applies equally to everyone. And so neither they nor us in the department can question that.
But Dr. Park, don't you think it's time now that the HAR 157, the law that covers immunization in school, is being reviewed, that perhaps the religious exemptions should simply be removed?
You know, that's probably in the next step in the future, and we try to take things one step at a time. I think change is very difficult to implement at any given time.
I understand that,
yeah.
But the last time this law was reviewed is 2001. Mm-hmm. Now it's 2019. Are mm-hmm. we going to wait another 20 years?
Mm-hmm. No, I certainly hope not. But again, it has to be done in measures and steps, and you cannot change things all at once,
Isn't the Department of Health responsible for this? Can't you press this?
Well, if I would actually urge you to press your legislators, because they are the ones with the real authority.
The legislature is going to Governor Ige for a signature.
The rules are, but I would also stress that those kind of things, the exemptions are actually in statute, and those are actually controlled by the legislature. And so I actually urge you and everyone out there to talk to your legislators, because we need them to speak up and do something.
We do have a call on the line from Hilo. Tom?
I'd like to say that Dr. Locatelli, this is by coincidence, he was all four of my children's pediatricians who are now all thriving adults with master's degrees in the mainland. They were all vaccinated with their measles vaccine. And just on Monday, I had my my annual physical, and my doctor at the VA said, "Hey, Tom, are you traveling anytime soon?" And I said, "Yes, I am. I'm traveling up to watch my daughter graduate in New York City next month." He goes, "Well, your antibodies are very low. I suggest that you get your measles vaccine." I'm like, "Yeah, give it to me. I mean, I do not want measles as an adult." And so what Dr. Locatelli, his enthusiasm, I totally am for vaccinating my children. I've never, not one of them ever had an adverse reaction. And I just had mine on Monday in my booster, and I'm fine. And I go work out, and I'm fine. So, yeah, I would like to listen to what you have to say about that. Thank you.
Well, Dr. Park, that's a good point. What if you have been vaccinated? What's the advice that you're giving the general public now? Because there are adults who are saying, well, do I need to get another shot?
Sure. So first, I'd say that look at your birth date. And it actually is really important, because if you were born before 1957, you most likely have natural immunity. So you don't actually need vaccination. You should have natural immunity. Every one of us who are born after that date do need to be vaccinated. And the current recommendations now are to get two doses of the MMR. Of course, there are a number of adults who only got the one MMR because they aged out of school when we're trying to catch everyone up. These days, all the kids are getting two MMRs. And that second one is actually not a booster. It's actually trying to mop up, if you will, all those who didn't respond, their immune system didn't respond with the first round. So we're trying to capture all the rest of us who maybe did not respond on that first round, so that we have even less people who still remain susceptible. Because with any vaccination, there's always going to be a small minority that, for whatever reason, your immune system just didn't recognize, you know, the vaccination. So there are still going to be a small percentage after vaccination that are going to be susceptible. But the hope is that the more people we can vaccinate, we develop that what we call herd immunity that basically protect all the susceptible individuals.
Dr. Park, I'll use the term Shibai for herd immunity, when you have schools with 45% religious exemptions, 37% religious exemptions. Herd immunity could work if it was distributed equally in the entire school system.
Yeah,
with only
I completely agree. Yeah.
But, you know, here on the Big Island, again, right up the street from me is a soup of potential infectious
yeah
disease.
I'll tell you, you're preaching to the choir on that one. I am a pediatric infectious disease specialist.
I know you are. That's
I'm like yeah, and I'm very, you know, some things that I have to deal with are definitely at odds with my personal and clinical professional
right.
Issues, you know, beliefs and such. But I also know, working in public health, that, you know, you can't win the battles by pushing, you know, all at once. And so it's really by measures. And again, like I said, the frustration for us in public health a lot of times is the authority actually doesn't lie completely with us. And I said before, the exemptions lie with your legislators. So the more our community, those of, you know, who do believe in vaccinations, and I would remind folks that, yes, there are a number of and growing, increasing vaccine exemptors, but 97% of kids across the state, and yeah, that's varying, you know, from school to school, but on average, 97% of all kids in the state of Hawaii are appropriately vaccinated, which means 97% of all parents of kids, which is the vast majority of our state, are in favor of making sure our kids are protected. I'm imploring all of you out there who are in that 97% to talk to your legislators, to get the dialogue going if you want to take that next measure that California and other states have already done.
So you make the point that the reality is the majority of people buy into the idea of vaccines, that they work.
Mm-hmm.
But our laws are lagging. And so that's why we are trying to fix that, at least to get it up to date as to what's happening now.
Right. And right now, what is in our authority is to make sure our immunization rules are up to date. And they have been woefully up to date for so many years. I'm thrilled to see that we're finally going to be up to date with modern medicine, with the standard of medicine that pediatricians like my colleague, Dr. Locatelli, are following already, regardless of the fact that our rules are outdated. And so it'll be awesome, because then we don't run into issues where there are conflicts. You know, there have been, our rules have actually been hindering some of the efforts of our pediatricians, in that it still talks about a schedule according to months, you know, months, how many months old a child is, as opposed to the modern schedule that the Advisory Committee of Immunization Practice puts out is based on weeks. And so you can imagine, because pediatricians and parents are adhering to the modern schedule, they could, by according to our state rules, seem like they're being vaccinated too early when they're actually not, medically speaking. And then there's that conflict, and insurance won't cover the quote-unquote extra dose that really, medically speaking, is not required. So, you know, it's just aligning our rules to what's already happening out there in our community.
Okay, so where are we at with the rules and the
process? The rules are very close. Basically, all they need to be done, that needs to be done at this point, is that they need to be formatted according to legal standards, so to speak. The legal language is appropriate, and that's going through the process right now with our Attorney General's office and with our planning office in the department. Then once that's done, the director can sign off on it and send it to the governor and get the governor's signature. So it is very close. My staff are waiting in the wings to help folks like the charter schools and all the schools to get trained up in this next year in terms of what all those vaccinations are. Vaccinations that, again, the pediatricians and other, you know, family practitioners and other healthcare providers are already well aware of and already providing to our kids out there. We're looking forward to partnering with the schools and other community members, and as well as the medical profession, in terms of educating our community, our parents, anyone who's interested. We just want to make sure everyone is aware and understands why it is that it's so important that we protect our communities.
If you're just joining the conversation, we're talking about the vaccine debate, and we'd like to know what you think. Join the discussion by calling us at 941-3689 or 1-877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. Our partners at Civil Beat have done a number of stories about the large number of unvaccinated children throughout the state. Those were just released recently, and it really kind of, to me, was a real eye-opener. I didn't realize that there were so many on Kauai. Yvonne, do you want to weigh in on what your reaction when you first saw those numbers?
It was surprising to us, but I think I want to reemphasize what Dr. Park and everyone really has been talking about, is that I think we need to redouble our efforts in getting education out there about the need for vaccines and the importance of it. Perhaps one thing that's slightly different in our charter schools, I do want to emphasize that our charter schools are public schools, like our department public schools, but each of our schools are run independently. They have their own governing boards, and the relationship with the state is they're on a contract with the commission. So they don't have oftentimes the kinds of resources that the department public schools have. They don't have perhaps a health aide or access to a public health nurse, like perhaps more of our public schools, our department public schools have. So, you know, there are things that I think our schools struggle with, and certainly this is an indication that more education and more resources need to be provided to them.
And is there any effort underway now to get everybody in the same room, someone from the Department of Education, from the Charter School Commission, from the AG's office and the health department?
Well, I think this has brought up another point that we certainly want to bring the parties together and to work more collaboratively together to get this information out. And I think Dr. Park probably has a lot to say about that.
Well, some, but I think my immunization staff actually have even more. And like I said earlier, we're sort of waiting anxiously to get started once our rules are updated to start that campaign in terms of helping to train up all the school staff. But my staff have already started reaching out to all the schools, and that includes not just the public, by the way. Don't forget the private schools, because there are also a number of them that we want to make sure are up to speed, so to speak. And we're reaching out to try and, you know, start planning ahead in terms of what are the needs, how can we address things, you know, what areas need to be, you know, certainly supported more, you know, how can we effectuate an effective training for the school staff, what kind of support do they need? You know, these are all things that we're exploring already with the school, with our school partners and other partners out there, medical providers, medical associations, I should say, to sort of explore, okay, how can we have an effective public health education campaign? Where is it lacking in the community?
And
Dr. Park, could I interrupt you just a second?
Sure.
Currently, the required vaccines essentially stop at kindergarten, do they not? If you're fully immunized up to kindergarten, there's no requirement for vaccines after that.
No, actually, so that's the immunization. That's why I'm so thrilled that our immunization rules are going to be updated.
I said currently.
Right. So currently, yeah. So that's been an issue. But people like you have been doing a great job of making sure the seventh graders are getting it.
Let me finish my point. Now immunization requirements are going to go up all the way through post-secondary, meaning college.
Right.
Correct?
Right, correct.
Why aren't school personnel also required to have these immunizations? Most of them are for adults as well as children. Teachers can spread measles to the students, and students can spread it to the teachers. Why is the law completely silent on that issue?
Yeah, that is a unique area that I don't think any state has grappled with ever, and for probably a number of reasons that are probably going to be beyond this show. But I would point out that the focus at this point are on the kids because they have naive, as you know, they have naive immune systems. They're still learning. Their immune systems are still learning about all the pathogens. They need to get their vaccinations. Many adults, actually, and those older adults, although that's getting to be less and less, have natural immunity. But there are a lot of us who've had chickenpox, for example, who had pneumococcal infection, who've had, unfortunately, some of the other things. Maybe not so much the polio, obviously, or measles or mumps these days, although that's changed, too, with the current events. But, you know, so
I
think that's...
I would also like to add that what I'm seeing, you know, now this vaccine refusal stuff appeared to start in the early 1990s, and now some of those children are adults
yeah.
who are having children of their own, and none of them have been immunized.
Sure.
And I'm worried about an unimmunized teacher teaching in a school, a charter school or a private school mainly, because that's where the problem seems to lie, who's totally unimmunized for measles and is going to spread it from student to student to classroom to classroom.
Yeah, Dr. Locatelli, we did reach out to the unions. We did hear back from HSTA, and they basically told us that the employees in schools and some offices are only required by the DOE to get the hepatitis B vaccine. And in that case, DOE pays the cost and provides for time off. Obviously, it is another point to raise.
Yeah, it's a very intriguing question, and certainly, definitely, I think it just reflects that there's the times have changed.
Right.
As I mentioned, you know, back in the day when vaccine requirements were first instituted in schools, most people had natural disease, the adults, that is. So it probably wasn't even entertained. What you're commenting on is something that's now unique to the times, and it may be something that we should be looking at in the future. However, again, what I've learned in my work in public health is how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? And so we're trying to do this stepwise process, and you know, there are many, many things to consider in the future.
We do have a call, Don from Honolulu. We're still on the line.
Yes, I'm still on the line.
Yeah, what's your question?
Hi.
I
actually had a question about the mumps, but after listening and talking, I just wanted to point out that you're talking about the RE, the religious exemption, and we have a 97% vaccination rate. We haven't really dropped. So while there might be pockets of more or less vaccinated, we still have a very high rate. And with this new HAR 11-157, you're adding the HPV to the schedule as well as the flu shot for preschoolers. And this may actually be a problem for some people because the HPV is a very controversial, and the flu vaccine has a high injury rate when you go to the vaccine adverse event reaction place where you look at where reactions are from vaccines. So this actually might be something that would maybe spike religious exemptions. And as well as, you know, a lot of people that get REs, they may be getting them for medical reasons, because a medical exemption might not be available to them. For instance, like if a parent has a child that gets injured, and then they then their sibling can't get an exemption, but they're afraid that their second child may have a reaction, that is a parent protecting their child, not being irresponsible.
Well, obviously, then the concern is more than just measles. There are a number of, you know, other diseases. We did have the spike you mentioned with the mumps, and then there was actually a story on the news I think last month where we had a whole military ship where the personnel came down with some kind of viral problem similar to mumps.
Right. So the caller introduces a number of topics that I can't address on all of them. And I would also comment, she commented that for preschools, flu vaccine would be required. That is not the case. It's recommended. It's not being required. So I just want to correct that. But aside from that, the studies, there have been no studies to show any potential, you know, long-term adverse effects associated with flu vaccinations. A number of studies talking about that. Also with the measles vaccine. In terms of, you know, again, to remind folks, I had said earlier what I talked about vaccines, not every vaccine is the same. Not everyone responds to the vaccines the same. There are always, unfortunately, going to be a few people, and with some different vaccines, it's going to be more than others, where they, despite vaccination, they just don't recognize the vaccine that we give them. Their immune system doesn't respond, and they remain susceptible. So the goal really is to try and vaccinate as many people as possible so that we have the majority, you know, a vast majority of people who do respond, who will then help protect those of us who unfortunately our immune system for whatever reason just did not respond. So that's important to remember. Those susceptibles still remain out there, and all you need to do is drop someone with a disease in the midst of these susceptible persons and they will get the disease. You know, so and then the last thing about medical exemptions, there are very few medical reasons as to why someone should be precluded from vaccination. And your doctor out there, those of us in practice, we all know what those conditions should be, are, and that's why the medical exemptions exist. Truly immunocompromising medical condition, you know, people on chemotherapy for cancer, for example, people who don't have a great immune system that can protect themselves from some of the viruses and such.
Dr. Park, I agree completely, but just think of the situation of a child with acute lymphocytic leukemia who cannot have a measles, mumps,
right,
or rubella vaccine, who is attending a charter school or a private school with 30%+ religious exempted students.
I agree. It's frustrating.
I understand why they're religious exemptions, but I think it's time to get rid of them.
Okay, we have a call from Hilo. David, I understand that you have a religious exemption.
Yes. Hello.
Yes.
Yeah. The religious exemption. This is more of a comment, and kind of curious about what you guys had to say about it. But I've always claimed religious exemption for my children, more for the purpose of lack of disclosure and information on behalf of the medical professionals. I have friends in the field who have asked, you know, hey, if you administer this shot, what is in it? I often hear the response, I don't know. Or I say, I've read that there's preservatives, sometimes heavy metals. Obviously, heavy metals can build up and cause toxicity. It's a lack of trust, really, that comes down to, for me and my wife, of knowing, you know, I'm going to give you my child to put something into their bloodstream. I want to know that it's clean and pure. I'm real health conscious of what we feed them and what we expose them to as far as environmental toxins. So that's kind of that's my main concern in it, is just that disclosure. Hey, here's what it is. Are there more than what we're saying there is? Yes, there is. Here's why. Here's what it does. It's been tested. It's thoroughly safe. And obviously then it plays into the, you know, interests of pharmaceutical corporations, and they're going to make money the more they sell. You know, we know how that can influence things. So
right,
that's my comment.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Locatelli, what are you seeing in your practice? I mean, do you have a lot of questions from your families that you treat, where they're worried about autism?
Practice, you know, if people refused to have vaccines, we wouldn't see their children. And this was starting at birth. Exceedingly dangerous for a private pediatrician to accept families who refuse to immunize their children. I mean, what I would be held liable if the child got measles, mumps, or rubella, or H. flu meningitis, or whooping cough, because I adopted the viewpoint of the family by not pushing for the vaccine. I can't force people to be vaccinated, but also I'm not forced to actually care for them. When I worked for the Westwood Community Health Center, which is a federally qualified rural health clinic, and I was a de facto federal employee, basically they saw everyone. And it usually was not a question. It was they would come in, we don't want vaccines, period.
This is The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. Today we're rebroadcasting a show that's focused on the debate over vaccines. No new calls are being taken. Stay with us. We'll be right back after a break. If you're just joining us, our guests in our studio, Dr. Sarah Park, epidemiologist for the State Health Department, and joining us via phone, Big Island pediatrician Dr. Peter Locatelli, and Yvonne Lau, Chief Operations Officer at the Hawaii Public Charter School Commission. Our last caller talked about distrust of modern medicine, and there is some concern about what's in the vaccine and, you know, do vaccines cause autism? I mean, Dr. Park, can you address those issues?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I can satisfy our caller, but I would say, you know, I myself, as a new parent, I totally understand where this caller is, you know, coming from. I would not want to put anything in my son's body that could potentially harm him. And that's why I feel confident in the safety of our vaccines. Consider this. Do you take antibiotics? Do you take aspirin or Tylenol or Motrin or Advil or any over-the-counter drugs? Well, you might be interested to know that vaccines are the most studied and regulated type of medication out there compared with all these other things. They're even more studied and regulated before even antibiotics. And how many of you take antibiotics for, you know, a bacterial infection? So I just want to point that out. The other thing is, when vaccines were first developed, they did contain a lot of things in it because people didn't really know better at that point, and some people did get sick. I mean, and the preservatives weren't in there at that time, and that was a problem because some of the vaccine components, they developed bacterial contamination, and that's how people got sick, actually, and some of them even died. That's how preservatives started getting added to vaccines. However, over the many years, I mean, think about how our medical technology has advanced in so many ways. Well, imagine it's also advanced in terms of our medications and being able to formulate, you know, medications that are cleaner, so to speak, in that there's very minimal amounts of a preservative, if then. Even the packaging, you know, has become so far advanced that under sterile conditions, they can be packaged and the components are kept sterile, so it minimizes even the need for preservatives at times. And so, you know, you can be assured that what's being provided is basically what's needed for the body to mount an immune response. Vaccines are basically medications to allow your immune system to learn how to fight off the infection itself, rather than becoming dependent upon another medicine like an antibiotic. Now you need to take additional chemicals, essentially, to fight off the infection rather than your own body being able to fight off the infection. So it's something to consider. And then again, there have been numerous studies demonstrating the safety of vaccines, you know, and no link to autism. And there are many, many other potential risks that we need to consider. And there needs to be more research done in the field of autism to better understand what's going on there.
Oh, we have a call from Maui. Tim, are you still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Yes. You have a comment or a question?
Well, it's more of a statement. I think that there was a very unfair inference made earlier where you spoke about 97% of children being vaccinated, and you said that that means that 97% of parents support vaccinations, and thus 97% of the adult population should support this legislation. But having a child vaccinated for mumps or measles does no way equate to the decision to have HPV or to give the government power to dictate or mandate that we should have to do this. That we do not support giving the government that power. That's a really slippery slope that you got to tread very, very carefully.
Thank you for that, Tim. Dr. Barr, can you talk about this vaccine hesitation, I guess, that we're seeing really all across the globe?
Yeah, I think, back in the day when vaccines were first implemented, again, it was a very different era. There was still natural disease circulating in the community. Many people had experience, personal experience and family experience with seeing people severely affected, from these diseases. So they understood the importance of protecting, our communities against these diseases. And so vaccines were more readily accepted at that time. Over time, the vaccines have actually been doing the job that we had hoped that they would do, which is protect us from these diseases. I mean, as you said earlier in the show, at the start of the show, measles was declared eliminated from the United States in 2000. That's an amazing success. Polio has not been seen in the United States in just as long, if not longer. I mean, these are amazing successes. But what it also means, even chickenpox, I mean, I run into young physicians now who have never seen it, which is mind-boggling to me. I have to teach them about it. And, that's actually concerning, is that our physicians even are having trouble, our younger physicians are having trouble recognizing some of these diseases because they don't have direct personal experience. Well, the wider community doesn't have that personal experience, so it becomes less and less real, so to speak, in terms of what it is that we're protecting against. And the problem is now in our face with the measles epidemic that's occurring nationally. And this is what happens, essentially, when people start to forget and let things slide, so to speak. And then we start to see these diseases come back, and we start to see the complications. Just this morning, a New York City colleague emailed a bunch of us to let us know that their city had just declared that they'd identified measles in two pregnant women. So it's just entering another era of concern, in terms of as this epidemic continues to grow, we start to see all the nightmares, so to speak, that used to occur on a regular basis pre-vaccine.
We have a question someone emailed from Pahala. Is an individual that's been vaccinated or had measles still able to carry the disease?
No. So once you've had the disease, you have developed natural immunity, and therefore you should be protected. As I stated earlier, if you were born before 1957, you are considered to probably have natural immunity, so you do not need vaccines. I want to make one comment, by the way, I'd neglected to talk about with measles. Especially scary is that it can be what I call a ticking time bomb, and I've actually cared for a patient who developed what's called subacute sclerosing panencephalitis. It's a very complicated name. Essentially, the virus, kind of similar to chickenpox, can potentially cause long-term effect later on in life, in that you recover from the measles infection, but in fortunately very rare instances, but unfortunately can occur, that some individuals, rare individuals, may develop a brain infection, so to speak. We don't even know, is it an autoimmune phenomena, is it directly from the virus, but someone can develop this condition, shortened SSPE is what we call it. And it's fatal. It's progressive and fatal, neurologically progressive and fatal. It's just heart-wrenching. And I watched a 9-year-old, who presented to the tertiary academic center that I was at the time, and had been misdiagnosed for a few months. And people thought she was having a psychological disorder. She at first thought that it was a social, disruptor and things like this. And finally realized that this was an actual illness that she was having, and then presented to us, and we were like, oh my gosh, this is a very severe and fatal disorder that she's got, and unfortunately she eventually succumbed. But it was heart-wrenching, especially since she was an identical twin, and her identical twin had escaped that time bomb.
Wow.
And so you could see the stark difference between healthy individual and someone who developed that complication. And the story had been that they had developed measles just before they turned a year old, so before they actually were eligible to get vaccinated, because they were exposed in an outbreak at the time.
And Dr. Locatelli, have you seen anything quite serious like that in your practice?
I have. I don't want to say anything further about SSPE because it's such a rare disease.
But it can happen.
A community this small, I do know of a case, but I you know, it's so too easy to identify individuals from
thank you for that.
Statements like that. I would like to make one comment about the gentleman who called, who was hesitant about vaccines and was more hesitant about the government forcing it. I don't know if he realizes that in Hawaii, it's very, very easy to homeschool your children. You basically just need to inform the local school district with the child's name and birth date and location and agree to homeschool. Parents are considered qualified teachers for the purposes of homeschooling. There's no requirement for any vaccines. There's no requirement for TB testing. There's no requirement for even a physical exam prior to school. And then you can pick and choose the vaccines you want, if you want any, or have none at all. I mean, that's not an ideal solution to the problem, but it is an option for people who are firmly against one or more vaccines that are required.
If you're just joining the conversation, this is a rebroadcast of an earlier show. No new calls will be taken. Our guests are Dr. Sarah Park, epidemiologist for the State Health Department, Yvonne Lau, Chief Operations Officer at the Hawaii Public School Charter School Commission, and Big Island Pediatric Specialist, Dr. Peter Locatelli. Sherry from Puna, are you still on the line? Thanks for your patience.
Yeah, I'm still here. And I'm like getting steamed and angry by some of the calls because I'm 43 and I was a preemie. And so a lot of my vaccines were delayed because of the time and education and knowledge, and because I moved a lot. And I'm just so angry that people would delay them because they believe in fake science. They don't have they don't understand chemistry, so they don't understand the word. They think it's junk. They'll refuse it. The reason why people are homeschooling, which they aren't really homeschooling them, they just don't want and trust public schools or be forced to vaccinate their kids. So they pick schooling that suits their ideology, and it's very high here in the east side of the Big Island. And if we can't mandate this, maybe we need to start holding parents criminally negligent if someone dies or gets severely ill because they chose not to vaccinate, and their child may have killed somebody. I mean, I really, you know, a lot of these people that call themselves liberals are really libertarians. There's a libertarian ideology here, and it's just, and it's out of sight, out of mind.
Thank you.
And so they don't believe something happens, and then they overreact.
Thank you for sharing that. You're not the only one that feels that way. We had another call on the line, Brett from Kaimuki. He's not on the line anymore, but he says he thinks it's parents that are responsible for the child's well-being, and he thinks that if a parent elects to defer the vaccine and doesn't take precautions, he calls it neglect. You know, so a very emotional issue. You're going to have people on both sides.
I'm wondering if this if we could have a comment from the charter schools, and that is charter schools are partially state-funded, partially other funding, correct?
Yvonne?
They're actually state-funded, and many of our charter schools do fundraise to supplement their budgets.
Our charter schools, though, for their personnel, do they have to provide TDI, workman's comp, health insurance, general liability insurance on the private insurance market?
They are all state public schools, so all employees are state public employees.
Okay.
And so, Yvonne, you know, what are you hearing, you know, with all the stories and the headlines? You know, are you getting questions from parents, from schools?
I'm actually getting a lot of questions from media. Haven't, you know, heard too much from parents and schools yet. But I think, the numbers tell us that more education needs to go out. We can do better. I think the more information we can get out there, more engagement with our communities, I think will help with the vaccination numbers. But I think, Dr. Park they're right. And our hands are pretty tied. I mean, I think whether it's a public charter school or a department school, when a parent, enrolls their child in a public school and says that they have a they sign a document that says they have a religious exemption, there really isn't a lot that the schools can do.
In the future, I would predict that there's going to be some huge suits against schools because of this high rates of unimmunized children and a child who is ill catching it, you know, a leukemic type child catching it. And I'm wondering if that's going to be the stimulus to change the law. Unfortunately, I think that's what's going to be, unless the DOH addresses this very shortly.
You know, we're talking about the need for education, and I don't know if what the ask has been for additional funding to help in this area.
Yeah, well, that's probably a long conversation.
for another show, okay.
Another show, but I would say that I continue to ask for support and funding. And again, I will repeat what I've said before a few times already, is that, you know, Dr. Locatelli and others out there who do believe in protecting our community, talk to your legislator, please, please. I'm imploring you for help here. You know, again, the department has authority over the rules, the immunization rules. We do not have authority over the statute for exemptions. That is the authority. The authority lies with the legislators. So please talk to the legislature and get them to listen, because, you know, there are people already talking to them, and you may disagree with their sentiment, and they're not hearing from those of you, Dr. Locatelli, that, you know, that feel differently. And so provide that balance, because we definitely, on the part of Department of Health, I've definitely tried to talk with them and educate them, but we need the help of our community out there to talk to the legislators about this issue.
Any other thoughts, Yvonne, just from the charter school perspective and what you would like to see in the next year?
I want to thank both of your guests for speaking out. And, you know, we, again, on behalf of the charter school system, we really look forward to working with all of you to get this information out there, to educate our parents and our communities about the need for vaccinations and how dangerous it is for the broader public. So we definitely look forward to doing that.
We do have a question that was submitted. Ray from Honolulu wanted to know, why does the measles vaccination have to be bundled with mumps and rubella? Can you just get measles?
It used to be that there was a measles-only vaccine, but they bundled it up. I think it was probably more sort of expediency in that, or sort of trying to make sure that kids were vaccinated against all three. But, you know, imagine trying to give an infant three different shots. I mean, there are many shots that they get. Although, as I counsel to parents, just think about the thousands of pathogens that are out there, and we only have a handful of vaccines to protect, only have a handful of tools at our disposal to protect your child, my child now, against these diseases. So, but it is a lot of shots, and, you know, trying to bundle it together to try and make it so that it's all in one visit, to make sure that we don't miss a child. And so that's probably, you know, a big reason why you see these vaccines that bundle together a lot of different pathogens that we're trying to protect against at once.
We do have, you know, the discussion going on about the rules. Dr. Park, you mentioned that they're almost there, would need the governor's signature, but it's probably going to be another year before that actually then kicks in, correct?
Well, officially before it kicks in as, you know, in effect in law, so to speak. But I would also comment that our pediatricians, and again, you know, hats off to all of the pediatricians in our state and family physicians who do see kids and other healthcare providers who see kids, because they're doing what needs to be done. They are adhering to the Advisory Committee of Immunization Practices recommended schedule for vaccinations. The complaint or the comment from the one of the callers earlier about vaccine hesitancy and distrust and trying to talk to physicians, that's something definitely in the medical profession probably needs to look at more closely. When I have an opportunity and when I attend and, you know, in the hospital, Kapi'olani, I mean, you know, I try to take that opportunity to talk to the house staff who are in training to try to talk to them about these kind of issues to, you know, get them to understand the importance of connecting with the parents and, you know, not just the kids, you know, and especially with the parents to try to answer their questions. It's, but it's, you know, it's a whole community effort.
Okay, and we just have to keep our fingers crossed that we don't have an outbreak here like we're seeing across the country, because it's happening. And L.A. is pretty close.
L.A. is pretty close. Well, New York's not that far either, really. There are direct flights now from, you know, as and have been for a while, and direct flights to the Philippines and various other places. So it's not just L.A.
Okay, and probably wash your hands as much as you can, right, the spread of disease.
I think in this instance, not just wash your hands, but like we've been talking about vaccines. Vaccines are still the best method of prevention, and, you know, there are so few against all the pathogens that are out there.
All right. Well, we'd like to thank our guests, Yvonne Lau from the Hawaii Public Charter School Commission, Dr. Sarah Park, epidemiologist for the State Health Department, and Big Island pediatric specialist, Dr. Peter Locatelli. And we thank you, the listener, for joining us on today's show. We weren't taking any new calls today, but you can contact the TalkBack line. Leave your comments. That number, 808-792-8217. You can also send us an email at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. And if you want to listen back to today's show, check out the Conversation Audio Archive at hawaiipublicradio.org. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow for more of The Conversation.